Senior Focus. Welcome everyone, I'm Anne-Marie Khoury, I'm your presenter for this session of Senior Focus. And it's Volunteer Week this week, and I have noticed a greater media attention to raising awareness about the value of our volunteers, what they provide, how they maintain vital services in New Zealand for many different age groups, and of course particularly in the health sector. Meals on Wheels and hospital reception folk are of course quite well known in the community, but many others like Communicare's weekly social connectivity sessions with lunch for seniors, they just wouldn't exist without volunteers. COVID-19 brought the student army out and other volunteers joined, and there were also many groups out doing their bit, calling on seniors, phoning them, collecting their shopping and delivering, taking them to appointments. And in particular, the Sikh community in South Auckland provided a fantastic service of literally hundreds of thousands of free meals to anyone in the community who cared to turn up. It was quite a feature and quite unusual. We haven't had something on that scale before, but very needed. So our volunteers are both there on the daily runs and the daily activities for a number of groups in the community that need them, but they're also specially able to get into gear to do things under emergency conditions like we saw with COVID-19. Some issues, I guess, do arise with people not sure whether they should volunteer. I know people have often nervously said to me, oh, well, what happens if something goes wrong? I don't want to be sued and I don't think I can handle this. And, you know, without understanding that very few organisations take people literally off the street. Most provide training of some sort. Most actually have an agreement that people sign. And when signing the agreement, what is expected of volunteers is set out very clearly, what their roles are, what their responsibilities are, what they're expected to do and not do. And they also have staff that manage them. And so it's not just a totally informal voluntary thing. It's quite formalised in certain ways, and there are rewards and things built in. So people do get a certain motivation, quite apart from the satisfaction of helping people. Maybe you've been a volunteer before and you've arrived newly in an area. There's no faster way to get to know your area than to actually volunteer, particularly for something that takes you out in the community with a wide range of people, something like an environmental group, helping clear a stream or plant trees, something like that, where you, over a morning, you get to know quite a wide range of people. So I've suggested this week that you might want to, if you're interacting with people, you might want to ask them some questions if they're new into your neighbourhood or into your life in general. You might ask them, have they ever been a volunteer before? Would they like to join a group? What would they like to be involved in? And when you ask that those questions, you know, be prepared to listen and be supportive and maybe give some fresh information, because sometimes people have the wrong idea about volunteering. I know quite often people who've been in a business environment where they've had to charge for everything and they know that there's no free lunch, they do not necessarily see the obvious benefits in volunteering. But volunteering can reduce a sense of loneliness. It can be of great value to those who would be home alone without much social contact if they weren't volunteering. In taking your focus onto solving other people's problems, it can bring its own reward. It can balance out mental chatter and ego-driven mind that has us comparing and judging ourselves and others, ruminating on what could be done differently and why such and such doesn't work and all sorts of other things. Where when you're actually focused on another human being and on their need, you haven't got time to worry about those things. So today I am focusing on loneliness. Loneliness and isolation are two different things. And one can only be lonely in the way that it's an internal conversation, an internal feeling, an internal response, so that it's really an individual matter. It doesn't matter whether you're in a crowd or whether you're living alone. What degree of loneliness you experience is an individual thing. Even those people who have plenty of social contact sometimes wake up in their lives at a point where they're suddenly feeling quite lonely, quite disconnected from those that are around them. It could be for a host of reasons. One can also be alone, living in a remote area or something, but not be lonely. You may feel very satisfied. You may have a rich relationship with nature. You may have a lot of online relationships, and consequently you don't need so much physical face-to-face connection. I'm also aware that at this time of the year, there is within the Māori community a focus at the time of Matariki on reflecting on people who've contributed greatly to our lives. And so we will actually have a program on Matariki, and we will be looking at the meaning of Matariki and the way in which people value their ancestors and value the work that's been done to lay the foundation for what we have now. So often we're so busy living in our lives now, we don't really realise what was done 40 years ago that's such a help to us today. So I'll be going into that in some detail. And also I've spoken about gratitude, and that theme that's been evolving this year. Dr. Carrie Howells is going to come onto our program, but she's actually delayed that, and we're looking now to have her in late July, early August, along with some other people looking at gratitude. And it fits in with the theme of Matariki. It fits in with some other things that we're going to be talking about. So we haven't forgotten all that. It's just a process that we're working through at the moment. Our last program on COVID-19 last week was, I guess, focusing on what didn't work in the communication sphere, who missed out, who was isolated, and what was that impact. This session, I'm planning to do not only look at loneliness, but to look at it in the context of what the Helen Clark Foundation is presenting in the way of papers online on the Helen Clark Foundation website, what was in the webinar that the Foundation put on yesterday, and what has come out of COVID-19 in terms of our understanding of combating loneliness. I think it takes sometimes pandemics, disasters and things to happen for us to actually look at how people interact in society and what works, what doesn't and so on. So that's the focus for today's session. And as I consider this webinar that I watched yesterday, I thought, now, for listeners, I would explain that a webinar is a presentation by video, online, so it's short. They can go on for hours, but this one didn't. It was about an hour, just over an hour, and many people can watch together. I'm sure people were watching all over the world. And the participation happens at the end of a speaker's presentation. There's a Q&A box. It's a little icon on the screen. You click on that with your mouse and up comes a space where you can write your question. So you can write, text your question in, write it in the box, send it off, and of course it's read by everyone who's on the screen watching. Whether it gets answered or not and how it gets answered is entirely up to the hosts that are running the presentation, and many questions were answered in the presentation anyway, or they were put aside because there wasn't enough time. So that varied greatly. But on the presentation were three main guest speakers, and then it was Helen Clark herself. Now, the guest speakers were Holly Walker, who was a former Green MP and is a strong policy advocate, and she's the Deputy Director of the Foundation. And she spoke about the six policy interventions that we need right now to combat loneliness. And they came directly from the paper that was on the website. I'm not going to go through the whole of that paper, but I am going to talk about those six interventions shortly. Hayley Fitchett from Kāinga Ora spoke about innovations in design, ways in which the Kāinga Ora Housing New Zealand building and development that's going on in Auckland, particularly she spoke about Roskill, which is off Dominion Road, that development that's occurring right now. She was talking about the co-designing, the bringing the community into the conversation and ensuring that there are good connections made between all of the tenants and the owners living in the area, and that it's not about movement through the area, through the new streets and lanes that are being built to accommodate the dividing up of these sections. Where one house had been on a quarter acre section, there will now be four or maybe even six dwellings. So where these lanes and streets are being put in, they are designed as play zones. They're designed as buzz spots, intersecting bumping spaces for the community to link and evolve. And so she spoke quite cogently and fluently and is a great communicator, and she was able to articulate how intergenerational activities will be part and parcel of what goes on that new community development. That's something they're really stressing and strengthening, because they have a predominance of small units with 40% living alone, and then they have another strong group of units that are single parents with children, or they are couples. So when you look at it, that's the social need, is young families needing help with childcare and needing a grandparently eye on their child's play in the area. At the same time, you've got people living alone who potentially are a long way from their own grandchildren, or maybe don't have grandchildren and perhaps don't have family members or relatives around. So these ideas are not new, but they're definitely being championed under this new state housing development. So the questions that were asked at the beginning of this webinar, who is lonely and why does it matter, were described and articulated well by Holly Walker. These public policy challenges that are in front of many governments around the world, and local governments, especially in large cities, worry about these things a lot. After disasters, they discover folk with no relatives to bury them, and then rehousing isolated and lonely folk. There have been lots of learnings that have occurred. Research has shown what works best. So those affected by loneliness in New Zealand, the research is showing, they are generally unemployed, or they have very low income. They are often Māori and they're often disabled. Some are both Māori and disabled. Job losses are critical as people lose their identity and become more socially isolated. That's happening to a lot of people right now. Hence the extra funding the government's put in for job seekers that are recently losing their jobs. Now, Helen Clark herself spoke on this issue on the webinar. She was saying that that when she was with the UN, the development focus was moving towards asking questions, not only about how can countries raise their GDP and be more economically successful, but what is the cost for countries that have a high GDP and yet high levels of people who are unhappy? Tremendous numbers of people who are disaffected and disconnected from the mainstream in society. And she talked about the stress people experience when loneliness is measured. It's really gets down to an area of threat. It's like people behave as though they're threatened with losing their life. Their cholesterol levels shoot up, their blood pressure goes up, their heart rate, their diabetes incidence, their levels. All these may be indicators that indicate they are at high health risk. So this is one of the reasons why we would want to focus on loneliness. And where people in the past might have said, oh, well, it's their own fault. They didn't bother to make friends, or it's unfortunate, but all their friends have died. It's not my problem. You know, you do hear people making these kind of comments, but as a person with a strong interest in social well-being, looking at the research, I can certainly concur that some of the most stressed people in our society are people who are very lonely, and they are often not even aware how stressed they are. So, it gets down to if they have a relationship with a GP who is very active about well-being and does something to support their developing some connectivity, finding a connection, using a social worker in the medical practice or something like that, good things can happen, and lots of health interventions are possible. But where that doesn't happen, where the person doesn't have a relationship with a GP, where there are insufficient practices to meet the population's need, there's going to be a need for more other things to happen. And so it's very interesting to realise just how many things can be done in society that can actually affect the outcomes. How many people can become involved in alleviating and reducing loneliness if there's a deliberate attempt to do this? And that's what I'm going to talk about next. In the meantime, I have got some music for us to enjoy, and that's from the Tim Finn album with Dave Dobbin and Vic Runga, and that was from a tour that they did some years ago, but it's Tim Finn's birthday today, I believe, as I'm making this program. It won't be when you're hearing it, but nevertheless, he's 68 this week, so it's a good number, and it's called Good Together, so we're all good listening to it.
Everything
welcome back. And we're on the subject of loneliness. We're looking at these six policy interventions that are a part of the paper that's actually available for you to read and look at on the Helen Clark Foundation website. So all you have to do is put Helen Clark Foundation into Google or ask your librarian to do that at the library on a computer for you, and then you can look at it yourself there, even print it off. So loneliness is reduced by more social connectivity. But what works for which age groups, which genders and ethnicities? What are the most likely possibilities for better outcomes? There's quite a lot of research already exists in this area, so this is not something new. In fact, there's quite a big body of literature across the world. And the biggest group that people are worried about are the group 15 to 24 of young people. And, I mean, it's not just because suicide is an issue. It's because, although that is the inevitable outcome if the loneliness gets deeper and deeper, but the key thing here is the waste of potential. And in New Zealand, we don't have a high birth rate, and we need every young person to grow into their potential to be a useful member of society. We really need them working and developing and growing in a healthy way, because we need all of them as part of our workforce in whatever capacity, but we certainly can't afford to lose them. So it's a big issue for us in society. I'm not going to go through all the policy interventions in depth. The ones that stood out were the benefits to the community of intervening, safer streets, less crime, and more people enjoying their lives, getting out and about, doing things. And we saw a lot of that under COVID-19. I've mentioned in previous programs about how pleasant it was not only being able to be out walking, and there was so little car traffic, it was very easy to get around, but how pleasant it was that people spoke and people said hello. Almost everyone spoke on the occasions when I was out walking, shopping and doing things in my neighbourhood. It was really like old times, like what I remember in the 60s and 70s and even early 80s. Another policy intervention is support for those who are already lonely. So, yes, one could focus on specific groups like refugees coming into the country, people that there are some services there already, but that could be focused on more. But it's also important to focus for those who are lonely, who aren't being picked up at the moment, but who are already lonely. And there's a very full discussion in the paper on that. I'm not going to go into that, but I am interested in the friendly streets, because that research was presented by an overseas guest, and it was really focusing on how well you plan and design the kinds of streets you build, how much interactivity there is possible with those laneways, and whether streets that are very fast traffic flowing and don't really allow for much conversation or much gathering across the neighbourhood, whether those can be altered, whether they can be redesigned, and what else can be put in place when they're doing new developments. So there's quite a lot of research about this now. I noticed also that there was discussion about the kinds of dwellings you have and the way those dwellings face. So if houses are built around a common area and they're in, or apartments blocks are facing that common area, if there's easy access to the common area, then people will begin to congregate and spontaneous conversations will happen. This is what we refer to when we talk about bumping spaces. It's quite easy to get to know people in those kinds of contexts. So I was interested in the story that one gentleman was telling about how in London they had built a luxury complex with a penthouse on top. He was a multimillionaire. He could afford to buy the penthouse. But he found increasingly he was so lonely at the top of this luxury tower. He was going past hundreds of doors if he used the stairs. Even if he went to the lift, he'd still go past 10 or 12 doors. He knew no one behind those doors, and there was no clear and easy way for him to get to know anyone, only perhaps potentially in a lift journey, which was pretty limited. You might see someone once in 6 months because you happen to be in the same lift as them at the same time. You know, it wasn't very likely that he would meet that same person again in a hurry. So he began to watch what was happening to the people who were in the subsidised housing in the block next door. That was a kind of a trade-off, I guess. The developer was given access to the land to build the luxury tower if he was prepared to build this other block as well. And we've done that same thing here in New Zealand with some of the new housing developments. Housing New Zealand gets access to the land and these quarter acre sections, the old Housing New Zealand buildings that are not habitable are removed, and that's the end of it. And what do we have then? We have these new places come up. Now, he just got himself into one of these places and started living in this, and he just blossomed. He had all these new friends, and he was no longer lonely. So that was a great story. I suggest that you go to the Helen Clark Foundation website, have a look at some of the papers there, and find out what research they are doing, because I think it's very valuable. And if you do think about your own situation of volunteering, there's plenty of places that you can assist. Thank you. Get together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6, or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/seniorfocus. And do note, Senior Focus is